This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Years ago, the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services was created, and our guest today, DES Commissioner Tom Burek, says the challenges his organization faced at that time were immediate and obvious. Unregulated hazardous waste sites contaminating the air and water, towns disposing of trash in open burning dumps despite the toxic smoke, and raw sewage spilling into our rivers. Today, Burek says the state has made tremendous strides from those days in cleaning up and protecting our natural resources. But the commissioner also says this legacy of success requires vigilance so the state doesn't backslide. And he adds our environmental challenges moving forward may be even tougher to resolve because they're harder to see and their causes are more complicated and diverse. Also, economic concerns weigh more heavily on government decisions these days. Budgets are tight at state agencies like Burek's, and businesses are especially leery of regulations and compliance costs that might hurt their bottom lines. Today in The Exchange, we sit down with Department of Environmental Services Commissioner Tom Burek as he reflects upon his agency's 25 years, and let's hear from you. What environmental progress do you see the state making over the years? What do you think is the biggest challenge facing Burek's agency going forward? And if your business or town has been regulated by DES, how effective or appropriate do you think those regulations were? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Burek, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you wrote a letter recently that was published in several newspapers about your agency's 25th anniversary, saying, Commissioner, that early in its history, DES responded to environmental challenges unthinkable to many of us today. Give us a couple examples.
Well, for example, we had very rudimentary wastewater treatment going on in many communities, and this meant that oftentimes we had raw sewage literally pouring into our rivers. We had rivers that ran different colors depending on what dye lots were being run in the particular mills along the rivers those
really?
Days.
Really? Wow.
And people today look back and they remember what those days were like when you didn't really want to go near the river. If you went fishing in the river, you sure didn't want to eat the fish. And it was just not a pleasant thing to do to think about what those rivers look like. But today we've made huge progress because we've invested a great deal of money in wastewater treatment plants, in dealing with the industrial waste so that we are treating those and recycling those in many instances as well. And so we have now cleaned up our rivers so that they are almost entirely fishable, swimmable, and drinkable. We've made huge progress. But that doesn't mean that we are done with our work. We have a lot more work to do.
Right, and you've said vigilance is a constant imperative, and I'll ask you about that in just a minute. But other examples, those river examples, are so striking. What about the way that we used to approach, you know, issues of trash and recycling and landfills and so forth?
I remember as a kid growing up in northern New Hampshire, the open burning dumps, you would take your trash to the dump, they'd make a big pile, and they'd light it on fire. Starting in about the mid-1970s.
Kind of stunk, didn't it?
Oh, it did stink. It was awful. There were just big clouds of smoke everywhere and in the middle of the beautiful White Mountains, for example. But across the entire state, that was going on. We realized that that wasn't the best thing to do with our trash, and so we banned open burning of trash. But what we began to do then is to use those pits in which we used to burn the trash as landfills. We would just take our trash and throw them into the pits and cover them up with dirt and throw more trash on top. Well, the problem, of course, was that we weren't thinking about what impact that might have on the groundwater because the rainwater is going to fall on top of the trash. It's going to cause the contaminants or the materials that are in the trash to leach into the groundwater, and that's going to affect our drinking water supplies and our rivers.
What was the sort of turning point? I mean, as you said, you grew up in northern New Hampshire, Jackson, I think. What was the turning point, Commissioner Burek, where people started to say, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing this anymore. Maybe the river running green one day and red the next isn't good. Maybe that stinky plume, you know, in the middle of this beautiful White Mountains village isn't a good idea.
I'm not sure one can point to any one particular turning point. Certainly what we know is that starting in the late 60s, early 1970s, there really was an awakening in this country and in New Hampshire, a recognition that, in fact, if we don't take care of our environment, we're not taking care of ourselves. And that also means we're not taking care of our economy. We're not taking care of the social structure on which our economy is built. And there was a growing recognition that these two things really fit together, that a healthy environment necessarily is going to mean a stronger economy. And so we began as a state to pay much more attention to this, to adopt additional laws. And then in 1987, a recognition on the – really 1986, a recognition on the part of the legislature that we could be much more effective in this work if we brought the various disparate parts of state government that were working on separately protecting air, protecting water, protecting our ground, our lands, and bring them all together into one agency. And that's what happened effective January 2 of 1987. We created DES and recognized that if we can bring all these pieces together, we can do a better job of protecting our environment, of serving the regulated community, and thereby of actually enhancing our state's economy.
You know, when you think about it, you do read about this environmental awakening and the first Earth Day in the, I think it was the early 70s. In that context, Commissioner Burek, it almost seems like New Hampshire waited a while. I mean, 1987, you know, that's a long time after the first Earth Day.
Well, it is a long time, but we have to remember that New Hampshire had laws and programs in place going back many, many decades.
So people were keeping an eye on this. Oh, there just wasn't a whole department looking at it.
That is correct.
Who was looking at it?
Who was
tracking this? Was it, you know, was it Department of Resources? Was it, you know, these separate state agencies? Who was keeping an eye on this before DES was around?
We had a Water Supply and Pollution Control Commission that dated back a number of decades into the 1930s or 1940s. We had a Water Resources Board that was responsible for managing the state's water resources, our dams. We had a separate Air Resources Agency. And we also had an Office of Waste Management that was part of the Division of Public Health Services in Health and Human Services. So these pieces were all there prior to 1987, but we brought them together at that time, and we also pulled in the wetlands program as well.
All right. Well, as we look back at 25 years, I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. Our number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the Exchange, we're sitting down with New Hampshire's Department of Environmental Services Commissioner Tom Burek. Over the past quarter century that his agency has been in existence, Burek says, as we've heard, the DES has made progress toward a much cleaner New Hampshire. We've talked about that. We'd like your thoughts. What progress have you seen made over the years in terms of New Hampshire's natural resources? And looking forward, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing DES today? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, theexchange@nhpr.org. Also, the Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you go to our page. You can join the conversation there. Commissioner Burek, so let's look forward. You've said that today's pollution problems are maybe even more difficult to tackle than these obvious, you know, sewage in the river and the open burning dump. Today's pollution troubles are harder to see, and their sources are more diffuse and more diverse and therefore harder to tackle. Give us an example of what you're talking about there.
Well, let's look, for example, at the challenge of protecting our waters today. What we call non-point source pollution is all of the different places that water comes from to get into our rivers and into our lakes. So water is coming off of parking lots, it's coming off of roofs, it's coming off of people's lawns, it's coming off of every place that water falls.
Farmers' fields.
The farmers' fields that rain or that snow falls and later melts from. All of those things are effectively sources of contaminants, because whatever is sitting there on top of the parking lot, for example, whether it's drippings of oil or antifreeze or fertilizer from the lawn, that's going to be picked up by the water and carried into our streams and then into our rivers and into our lakes and eventually into the ocean.
So unlike days of old where the water pollution that we were concerned about was, you know, sewage or pollution from one big pipe coming out of, you know, a factory, whatever. Today, it's coming from 100 different sources.
Not just 100 different sources, 100,000 different sources. And so the challenge is, how are we going to bring people together to recognize that all these little pieces by themselves don't make any difference, but when you add them all up, they make a huge difference. And how do we most effectively address those?
Right. How do you address that? I mean, we've seen that with the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland, for example, which is sadly not in great shape and was once an incredible source of life and seafood. You know, one person spills a little gas at the gas station. Oops, that goes into the Merrimack River. Another person, you know, maybe use a little too much fertilizer in their lawn. Oops, that goes into the Merrimack River. But DES can't run around and, you know, fine all these people.
No, and we
and nobody's doing it on purpose.
No one's doing it on purpose, we don't believe. There may be a few who are, but generally people are not. And it's really primarily due to the fact that people don't understand and recognize the connections between what they do in their individual lives and what, for example, they might do in putting fertilizer on their lawn, and how a green lawn can in fact mean a green water body. And so the challenge that we face is not to necessarily develop a whole lot of new regulatory programs, but to work with the manufacturers, for example, of fertilizers, to help them reformulate their products so that they will not contain any more nutrients than are absolutely necessary to help people get the kinds of lawns that they're looking for. And in fact, we currently, across the New England states, we recently initiated an effort across all the six New England states to really develop a program to work with the manufacturers of fertilizers and the folks who are out there professionally applying fertilizers and other interest groups to figure out a way that we can voluntarily address that challenge rather than looking at new regulatory programs.
And I think I read about that. You're urging the fertilizer companies to sell more slow-release fertilizer than quick-release because it takes longer and has less of a chance of getting into the water. What do you do, though, Commissioner Burak, you know, if an industry, or be it the groundskeepers or be it the fertilizer industry, who says, you know, I just really don't have the time or money or energy to do that right now? You know, sounds nice, but I don't feel like spending the cash that it's going to take to change my MO.
First and foremost, we sit down with people and we talk with them and understand what their needs, what their concerns, what their perspectives are, help them to understand what the environmental imperatives are here, and help them to see how by possibly changing their practices or changing the products they use, they may be able to save money and get better results for their own programs, their own businesses, their own operations, and at the same time get a better environmental result, which will help them to have a better public face and get more public support and probably more customers as well.
Because you can put a label on it, this fertilizer will not harm your local water body.
If used appropriately and used well, we hope not. That's right.
We will talk a lot more, Commissioner Burak, after a very short break. We're going to take just a minute or two now, though, to check in with our March membership drive.
And you can make a gift right now to support the exchange and all the programs you rely on here at NHPR by calling 1-888-805-6477 or go online, nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Rick Ganley during the exchange, asking you to make your phone call and get in the drawing we're doing today. Everyone who donates by noon will be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card. So make your gift right now online, nhpr.org.
And don't miss out. Give us a call now. Become a member of NHPR, 1-888-805-6477. You know, the exchange gives you a chance to talk to your government officials. This is a usual occurrence around here. We've had commissioners of education, transportation, the commissioner of corrections, HHS, all here recently. And this is the only place in New Hampshire media for you to come and have a forum like that. So that's why it's important. It's important to support that service. Give us a call right now. Support the exchange. Support all of the programming you get on New Hampshire Public Radio. And get entered into that drawing. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
1-888-805-6477. And if I can just pull the curtain back for just a moment, you know, Laura Kanoy doesn't just walk in here at 8:30 in the morning and throw herself into the chair and just do an interview. These things have to be booked. They have to be prepared. We have to get on people's calendars days in advance, sometimes weeks in advance. There are producers, a team of people that work on the exchange, and volunteers and interns who help do the research, help fill a file so that when Laura sits down to write her script and write her questions, she's got this big file of preparation material. Everything that goes into what sounds like a very effortless interview on the radio is days of preparation leading up to it. And that's what you are supporting when you become a member of this radio station is all of those behind the scenes things that make your listening experience seamless and almost effortless. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Of course, you can do it at many different levels. I might suggest becoming a day sponsor on NHPR. This would be a great way to make your membership on NHPR. You can use that day sponsorship, as a matter of fact, for things like special occasions in your birthday, have special things in your life, like have a birthday announced or an anniversary, maybe a wedding announcement, whatever you'd like to do. It's a great way to support the radio station, and it's a fun way, too, to let others know that you are a member of NHPR. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477. You can also go online to nhpr.org and make your pledge that way.
I have a suggestion. How about a dollar for every episode of The Exchange? That would be a $5 a week, comes out to $20 a month. That's a $240 contribution. And you are making a clear statement about your value of this program, The Exchange, this only statewide call-in forum where you can speak to people at the state leadership level. So make that gift of $240 today. We will send you our munch and sip combo, which is the lunch tote and the travel mug, a combination, so you can bring your drink and your lunch with you to work. And you'll be entered into our drawing today. Everyone who donates by noon will be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card. So you're supporting New Hampshire Public Radio, you're supporting The Exchange, and you might just be a winner. So make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
I know a lot of people wonder, Abby, how much they should donate. And a good way to figure that out is to figure out how much you listen. Maybe you catch a little of the Morning Edition, then you catch The Exchange. Maybe you catch half an hour of All Things Considered on the way home in the afternoon. Maybe you check out Car Talk on the weekend. Now, you know, all that could add up to, you know, 9 or 10 hours or more per week. Maybe a gift of $120 is appropriate. And if you spread it out over the course of a year, it's just $10 a month. That's not a bad deal for all the news and information and entertainment that you get in a given week from NHPR. So give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. Pledge what makes sense to you for your amount of listening, 1-888-805-6477, or go to nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from your members, and support also comes to us from the NEEF Network organizations, hosting Destination College, a college planning convention for high school juniors and parents in March. Information at destinationcollege.org. And from Penny Pitchu Travel, serving the needs of vacationers and business travelers of New Hampshire with offices in Laconia and North Conway. Information at pennypitchutravel.com. Good morning. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking to Department of Environmental Services Commissioner Tom Burek, and we invite you to join us. What environmental progress do you see the state making, especially over the 25 years that the department has been in existence? What do you see as the biggest challenges facing DES today and moving forward? And if your town or business has been regulated by DES, how effective, how appropriate do you think those regulations were? Join us with your calls at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is on Facebook. You can go to our page and join the conversation there. And Commissioner Burek, before we go to our listeners, I want to wrap up what we were talking about before the break, and that is the difficulty of handling what you called non-point source pollution in water. In other words, it's not stuff dumping out of a big ugly pipe. It's a little bit from my lawn and a little bit from the gas I spilled at the gas station and a little bit from the farmer next door and what he uses on his crops. And just how difficult it is to regulate all those little pinpricks. One area of the state where this has really come up is the Great Bay. Big concerns over there. Pockets of the Great Bay may be dying. Big concerns on the other side of taxpayers. You got to upgrade your wastewater treatment plant, but boy, it's going to cost millions of dollars. How do you see DES steering a course through these two deep concerns?
Well, our challenge, of course, is to make sure that we are protecting this incredible resource that we have here in the state of New Hampshire. Great Bay is really a national treasure. It's a very valuable resource that we have. It's vital to ensuring that we have a healthy ocean ecosystem. And So there's no question that this Great Bay system is challenged, that it's in trouble. And the challenge that we have, of course, is to ensure that as we're taking actions to protect it for the long term, that we are making sure those resources are being directed appropriately. And when we look at Great Bay, we know that it's both the point sources, the wastewater treatment plants, that are contributing nutrients to Great Bay. And there's been broad recognition and acknowledgement on the part of the communities that we need to reduce the nitrogen discharges. And it's really a question of how much and over what period of time. And we as a department are working very closely with the communities and with EPA, recognizing that EPA, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency, is in fact the permitting authority. They write the permits for these wastewater treatment plants. And we're trying to get the parties working together to come up with an approach that's going to make sense for the long term.
You're kind of a middleman then on this issue.
We really are in the middle on this.
And when you said point sources from the wastewater treatment plants, so we are still dealing with point sources, pipes going into the Great Bay.
Yes, we are. And we know in the case of Great Bay that a significant portion of the nutrient loading that is causing the greatest impact to water quality is, in fact, coming from the wastewater treatment plants. Probably at least 50% of that pollution is coming from those plants. And so there is a broad acknowledgement on the part of the communities that something needs to be done. And again, it's really a question of how much and over what period of time.
Well, that's been the sticking point, and you know this much better than I do. And the position of middleman is often a thankless job. As you know, Commissioner, some in the environmental community say that you guys are leaning towards the towns too much and saying, yeah, you don't have to clean up so quickly, that you've gone too easy on the towns, you know, and that threats to Great Bay are serious enough that you should be taking, you know, dramatic action, whatever the costs. Because the costs of losing Great Bay are too serious.
Well, there's no question that the cost of losing Great Bay would be significant. You spoke earlier about Chesapeake Bay and the reality that if you don't take care of the resource or protect it quickly enough, it can be very, very difficult and much more expensive to try to bring it back. And so,
bring it back? I mean, it's nature. You know, can you really recreate that unique balance that nature provides?
We have to believe that we can, and we have to be committed to the notion that, in fact, if we work at it, we can get things better again. And I believe that history has shown that if you make the effort, that we can help nature to recover. And in the case of Great Bay, we are going to continue to work with the communities on the nitrogen and the wastewater issues. We're going to be doing new assessments of the health of the estuary this year, both for reporting to Congress and for a conference coming up later this year. We're working on a study right now, and there's other research being done at UNH, really looking at how much of the nitrogen pollution, for example, comes from the different sources, wastewater treatment plants, fertilizer, failing septic systems, as well as even what's coming out of the air, because a portion of the nitrogen loading to our waters is, in fact, stuff that's coming out of the air that originally started either from power plants or from automobiles or truck emissions, whatever they might be. We're also working to develop a comprehensive monitoring plan for the estuary so that we can develop additional data to allow us to better track both what progress we're making and also to better steer us in identifying, and particularly steer EPA and the communities in identifying where we need to make further reductions in the discharges.
Our number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Join us, 1-800-892-NHPR. It's your chance to talk with Tom Burek, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. And Commissioner Burek, let's go first to Sarah in Manchester. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead. You're on the air with Commissioner Burek.
Good morning, Laura, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for this topic. This is really great. I appreciate the work that you're doing on the point sources, the industry. But I'd like to know if there's any work being done to control the types of chemicals that these chemical lawn companies use on residential lawns and also golf courses, because I personally don't even let my children walk on golf courses because I'm worried about the chemicals they're going to become exposed to.
Sarah,
and
thanks.
I was wondering if there's anything more eco-friendly in the works that you were going to regulate the types of chemicals that they could use on those lawns.
Well, it's a good question, and it gets to something you talked about earlier. Do you encourage, as you were saying before the break, or do you regulate, as Sarah suggests?
It's a great question. And with respect, again, to nutrients in particular, or nitrogen, for example, that is something that we're working on at a regional level, trying to get the manufacturers voluntarily to change their formulations. In terms of
voluntarily, then, not saying, no, you can't do this.
That's correct. Because, again, in the case of New Hampshire, we're such a small part of the overall market that if we were to adopt a law or regulation that said this is the formulation for fertilizers in New Hampshire, it would be difficult for the manufacturing community to come up with a formulation that was just for the New Hampshire market.
So if California did it, that's another story.
That's right. On the other hand, if all six New England states get together and say we'd really like the manufacturers to reformulate a product that would be used in all the New England states, that's something that they can work with us on. With respect to other chemicals, whether they might be herbicides, for example, things to kill off certain kinds of plants, or particular chemicals used to kill off bugs on golf courses, for example, those are actually regulated by the federal government under the Toxic Substances Control Act. And so we can bring concerns to EPA, and we're part of a group of states that is looking at, for example, reform of the federal TSCA law. But we do not directly regulate those chemicals. We do not have the legal authority necessarily to do so.
Well, Sarah, thanks for the question. And again, we're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. As we look back at 25 years of the Department of Environmental Services, we're looking at some of the changes that have happened over that time and some of the environmental challenges that Commissioner Burak sees ahead. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Commissioner Burak, earlier we were talking about how the environmental problems today are less obvious than, again, that, you know, dump that's being burned and creating a big plume of smelly smoke. Less obvious and more diffuse. Again, you've been talking about water pollution and how today it comes from a zillion different sources. Climate change is another example where you can't really see it. You're not really sure where it's coming from. Tackling it is extremely controversial. Again, as the head of DES, how do you promote initiatives on climate change in a climate, pardon the pun, of doubt that this is worth the trouble, that we're not really sure, that it's not worth the expense? I mean, there's still some skeptics over climate change.
Well, I think the reality here is that whether you accept the science or not, and certainly from the standpoint of DES, we believe the science is very compelling that climate change is in fact occurring. But that issue aside, there are certain things that it simply makes sense for us to do that provide many, many other benefits to us as a state and as a nation. And so reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, which necessarily can mean making us more energy independent as a nation, simply makes sense. Using less energy than we absolutely have to simply makes sense. It makes sense to save money. It makes sense to insulate our homes. It makes sense to drive as fuel efficient a vehicle as we can. Why waste something? Why throw money away when we don't need to do it? And so really what this comes down to is things that we can and should be doing anyway because they're in our own best self-interest. And if we do these things, they will help us to address this challenge of climate change.
One of the techniques of addressing climate change here in New Hampshire and in New England is REGGIE, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And lots of questions surrounding this program in recent years, Commissioner Burak, from both Republicans in the legislature who don't like it, who say it raises electric rates, and on the other side, some of the environmental world who say it doesn't go far enough. I want to take that first critique first. How much has REGGIE raised electric rates, Commissioner Burak? Do we know?
On average, across the New England states, I believe it's about 46 cents per month for a residential user.
46 cents per month?
That's right.
For a residential user.
That's how much rates have gone up. But what's important to recognize is that in the long term, what REGGIE is doing is allowing us to take the dollars that we're raising, invest them in energy efficiency, and thereby reduce overall electric demand. And by reducing overall electric demand, we reduce the need to build new power plants, and particularly new what we call peaking plants, the plants that may only operate a few hours or a few days a year, for example, on the very hottest days of the summer. And if we can avoid building those plants, we actually bring electric costs down for all consumers. And so everybody, in fact, saves by investing in energy efficiency. That's what REGI's all about, a very modest effort to begin the process of reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the 9 states that are now participating in the program.
Yeah, one state dropped out. Who was that?
That was New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, they dropped out recently. It used to be 10 states. So you mentioned 46 cents per month per household. As you know, if you're a big manufacturer or a major hotel or a major retailer, you have to multiply that cost many times over, right?
Well, it's probably, and I don't have the number in my head, but it's probably in the order of a few hundred to $1,000 or so dollars a year for a business that their cost might increase. But it's really going to depend on how much electricity they are actually using as well at this particular time. But again, we're taking the resources that we're gaining from the sale of the allowances and we're reinvesting those across the region in energy efficiency, in retrofitting housing, in building the infrastructure that's going to allow us to reduce overall energy demand longer term. And that is going to save all of us money.
Why do you think REGI's been so controversial then? Back and forth, let's repeal it, let's revise it. Why do you think some people are just continuing to be unhappy with this program?
I'm not sure I can speak for those who are unhappy with it other than to...
I know you've been a major supporter of it, out front on this.
We have been as a department because we do believe that this is in the long-term best interests of the state of New Hampshire and the state's people. But I think it's always difficult to figure out how best to achieve change and to make change occur. And that's what REGI is beginning to do. We're really taking a more market-based approach to addressing the climate change challenge. But I would argue strenuously that it is a successful approach, that we have demonstrated that a cap-and-trade type system for carbon emissions can work, that it can be very successful and productive, that the resources can be invested in ways that will, in fact, save money. And there was a recent study completed by the analysis group out of Boston, Mass., that clearly demonstrates the benefits that REGI has brought to the region.
Yeah, we did a whole program on that if anyone listening wants to go back and check that out. There has been some controversy, Commissioner Burak, though, over the idea that, you know, this business gets a grant to improve efficiency and this business doesn't, and the fairness of distributing these energy efficiency funds.
Well, I think it's important to point out a couple things. First, every business in the state is eligible to apply for these grant monies. Secondly, the Public Utilities Commission that actually is responsible for allocating these grant dollars really looks at where can they get the biggest bang for the buck. That is, where can an investment in energy efficiency reduce overall demand for electricity the most? Coming back to the notion that I just explained, that by doing that, we actually bring electric costs down for everybody. And so while we may be investing in one particular facility, we're actually benefiting all facilities.
Because, again, more conservation means you don't have to build that extra power plant and so on.
Exactly right.
We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, more of your calls. We're going to check in now, though, quickly with our March membership drive.
Oh, gosh. The Exchange, of course, is my absolute favorite. I think Laura does such an extraordinary job on both local and national issues. Everyone loves Car Talk. I listen to Prairie Home Companion. I love Diane Rhee. I enjoy Talk of the Nation. And, of course, it would not be morning without Morning Edition, and it would not be the evening without All Things Considered. This is Bishop Gene Robinson. I'm the 9th bishop of the Diocese of New Hampshire.
And, you know, he is right. It is just nothing like waking up to Morning Edition. I feel partial to it myself. I'm Rick Ganley, host of Morning Edition here on New Hampshire Public Radio alongside Abby Goldstein. And he is right about Laura as well. You know, nobody does it quite like Laura Kanoy. Nobody covers New Hampshire like The Exchange. And that's why we're asking you to give us a call now and support it. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call. You can also become a member of New Hampshire Public Radio at nhpr.org. And when you do, we've got a fantastic prize for someone today who is becoming a member of NHPR. Everyone who donates today by noon is going to be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card, which you could do an awful lot with. So somebody's going to win it. It might as well be you. Give us a call, 1-888-805-6477.
Or online at nhpr.org. Really interesting conversation this morning with Tom Burek from Department of Environmental Services. And it's your chance to call and talk to state leadership here on The Exchange. We got a web gift from Nancy and Keene. Loves Laura Kanoy, Diane Rehm, Terry Gross, Kate McNally. We had a gift from Dan in Concord, who loves the evening rebroadcast of The Exchange. So maybe you missed part of the show in the morning, or you think you caught it, but you get to listen again in the evening. Anne in Concord loves it all, especially Laura Kanoy in The Exchange. Jill in Campton loves The Exchange and Science Friday. David in Oxford loves all the programs, especially The Exchange. Michelle in Merrimack, Diane Rehm and The Exchange. Other people have done their part to support The Exchange. Now it's your turn. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
That's right, Abby. They've done their part, but they're counting on other listeners to step up and do their part as well. So sure, you love the programming, but, you know, why pledge? Why become a member of NHPR? Well, Lucas and Conway suggest it's the guilt alleviation, which I think there's a big club for that, is absolutely. Cynthia in Lancaster says she loves NHPR now that we've got a station out of Littleton. Kirsten in Lancaster says she depends on it. And Sean in Lebanon says it's an immeasurable positive in my life. And Joel in Londonderry, I think, puts it succinctly. He says, because I need NHPR and NHPR needs me. So I think that says it all right there. Give us a call right now. Become a member of NHPR. Get entered into that drawing for the $500 Apple gift card. And let's hear from you, too. We'd love to hear what you think of The Exchange in New Hampshire Public Radio. 1-888-805-6477 is the number. That's 1-888-805-6477.
And on the website, nhpr.org. Everyone who donates by noon today, that's a little over 2 hours from now, will be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card. You can use that in the iTunes store for dozens of movies, hundreds of TV shows, hundreds of songs, hundreds of apps. And you know what? If none of this stuff really has any meaning for you, if you're not an Apple person or an iTunes person, I know there's somebody in your life who is. Think about that person who can't put their iPhone down and they're completely hooked to their Apple product. You give them that $500 Apple gift card and they are going to freak out. So get your name in the running, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Yeah, you could be a hero for them and you'll be a hero for us becoming a member of NHPR. Now, when you do become a member, don't choose the travel mug or the new lunch tote because you can get both with NHPR's Munch and Sip package. They're a matching light green with the NHPR logo in white on both, and they can be yours for a donation of just $20 per month. Call now. Get yours, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Clean Yield Asset Management, Norwich, Vermont, tailoring client portfolios for financial performance and social impact, including investments in local agriculture. And from the Nashua Symphony, with Sergei Shepkin performing the Simply Great Concert featuring Beethoven's Emperor Piano Concerto, March 17th at 8 p.m. Tickets at nashuasymphony.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the state of our environment here in New Hampshire with Commissioner Burek of the Department of Environmental Services. You can join us with your questions or comments for Commissioner Burek at 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Also, we're now on Facebook, so you can go to our page, join the conversation there. And Commissioner Burek, before we go to our listeners, I did want to ask you about your budget. The last time we talked, which was May of last year, you were just in the thick of a very difficult budget process, like all the other commissioners. The state had a tremendous deficit, and the lawmakers were trying to, you know, get rid of that deficit. We have to balance our books by our constitution here in New Hampshire. So how was your agency affected by this extremely difficult budget situation last year?
Laura, we were affected in a number of ways in the sense that we lost quite a few positions. We, in fact, lost half of our general fund positions. Not all of those were filled positions at the time, but we did lose a significant number of positions. We lost funding for several programs, and we had to reduce program spending in quite a few areas as well, which necessarily means that we don't have the same ability to provide services and support to the communities of the state of New Hampshire.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, sure. Programs that we lost are our indoor air quality program, our indoor radon program. We just aren't in a position to be able to help homeowners and businesses address those issues now. We no longer have as many staff available to help communities deal with lakes and rivers management issues. We no longer have as many staff available. In fact, our staff were cut in half for both of these programs for our volunteer assessment program for rivers and lakes, where we have hundreds of volunteers each year going out and collecting water samples so that we can have data to allow us to figure out where we have water quality impairments and where things are getting better or at least staying level. And so we don't have that support anymore for those volunteers on whom we are highly dependent. We don't have the same level of support. At the same time, we lost a significant amount of grant money that we pass on to the communities. And so our state aid grant program to help communities cover their debt service on upgrades they've made to our wastewater treatment plants or to drinking water systems, essentially those programs are frozen in time, in the sense that we're continuing to monitor to meet our existing payment obligations for grants that were already made, but we're not taking on any new grant obligations because the funding simply isn't there from the legislature. And so the legislature effectively directed us to create a delayed and deferred list, and we now have some 93 projects on that delayed and deferred list, which over time will need some $40 million in funding.
Projects like wastewater treatment plants.
That's correct. Upgrades to wastewater treatment plants in big cities to small towns across the state, new or replacement of sewer lines, because it's important to recognize that our wastewater treatment plants, for example, were built typically 25 to 35 years ago. And those plants are getting old. They're getting tired. They are either running out of capacity or the equipment simply needs to be replaced, or as science tells us more about what the risks are to the environment, we need to have more stringent standards applied to those facilities, and therefore we need to reduce the discharges from those. And that all costs money. And as we look into the future, we're looking at a price tag over the next 10 to 20 years here in New Hampshire just to address our water infrastructure needs in the range of $2 to $2.5 billion. So for drinking water systems, wastewater systems, our dams, addressing stormwater issues, we have a huge investment to make, and we need to find a way to be able to make that investment. New Hampshire lives on water, but are we spending the money? Will we find the money to make sure that we can continue to have the water we need to live?
Well, and one contaminated beach makes a lot of bad press for the state in terms of, you know, recreation and so forth. So there's an economic circle there.
No question about it. Our economy is very dependent upon having a clean and healthy environment.
Let's go to Jeff in Chichester. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air, and thanks for waiting.
Yeah, no problem. I had a quick question for the commissioner. Something he said earlier was that people should upgrade the energy efficiency of their houses, insulation. They should drive the most energy-efficient car they can because, essentially, they're just throwing away money, roughly what he said. And I just take issue with that just because those are all long-term investments that, I mean, it's going to be quite a few years before anyone sees a payback on those type of improvements to their houses, whether it's air sealing or improved R value of the insulation. And with buying a Prius or something like that, I mean, the price tag makes it so cost prohibitive for so many people. I just don't see where the real throwing out of money is with making those type of investments. And I have to say, you'd probably be better off not making those improvements. They're not as energy efficient as you could be, but you're not spending a ton of money to make them.
Yeah. Jeff, I hear you. Some of those retrofitting of your house, for example, if you've got a big old leaky house like I do, and certainly buying a Prius, it is expensive. It's hard to make those investments. So it's easy to sit here and say, we all should, but Jeff's raising a good point.
Well, it's a fair point on one level, but I would respectfully take issue with Jeff in the sense that I think there are many people who can afford to make these investments and make them now. And I will tell you, in my own personal circumstance, my wife and I did do spray foam insulation around the sills in the basement of our house. And we immediately noticed that our house was no longer drafty. We immediately found that we could set our thermostat and have a comfortable house, not at 70 degrees, but at 60 degrees. And we are, in fact, getting the benefits immediately of those investments. And so I really, again, respectfully disagree with the perspective. I think that these are important and worthwhile investments to make. And, in fact, the Climate Change Action Plan that was developed for the state several years ago by the Climate Change Task Force identified the need to upgrade or the opportunity to upgrade the energy efficiency of our building stock in the state as probably the best single investment that we could make of resources that would actually reduce the overall need and demand for energy across the state long term. And so this is something that does make a difference on an individual homeowner level, but also in the aggregate makes a huge difference as well.
You know, we had a real interesting conversation a couple weeks ago here on The Exchange with the author of a book called Conundrum, who said it's not enough, it's not even close to enough to keep on doing what we do now, drive, live in big houses, whatever, and do it better, more efficiently. He said the real key towards tackling our environmental problems is less, living smaller, living closer, not driving nearly as much as we do now. He said it's not good enough to drive a Prius or retrofit your house.
Well,
we're kind of kidding ourselves by taking these little mini steps.
I think for many people, taking these steps will in fact make a difference. One of the beautiful things about New Hampshire is that we do have a diversity of landscape. We have a diversity of densities here in the state, and different people want different lifestyles for themselves. And the challenge is in the lifestyles that we all choose for ourselves, how can we best live with the earth, and how can we best take care of this earth?
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. And here's an email from Joe, Commissioner Burak. He says, great show. Please ask what your guest thinks about the, quote, new Comprehensive Shoreline Protection Act. Hard work and unimpeachable science went into the creation of the original act, and the new cast of legislators in Concord decided to destroy it. Joe says, our leadership is failing us. New Hampshire environmental laws are among the least progressive in the nation. We did a program on this as well. There were some revisions made to the Shoreland Protection Act, I believe, last year in the legislature. And some people did feel like Joe does, that these weakened what was a very good law.
And we've certainly heard that perspective from many people. I think the practical reality here is that we at DES are charged with implementing the laws that the legislature or the federal Congress actually gives us. In the case of the Shoreland Protection Act and the amendments that were adopted a couple years ago, they really were a compromise. And whether this right balance was struck is certainly in question and in dispute. And I'm aware that there are communities in the state that don't believe that the legislature took that in the right direction. And there's at least one community, maybe more, that are in the process of or have adopted ordinances to, in fact, take us back to what the law was prior to the most recent
set
of amendments.
Law.
That's right. But our overall experience is that with each of the sets of amendments to the Shoreland Protection Act, which is now, in fact, the Water Quality Surface or the Shoreland Water Protection Act, Water Quality Protection Act, that these, as a general matter, have resulted in improvements, but ability to for the regulated community more readily understand what the requirements are and to be able to comply.
It was confusing, but the complaint and the concern is that the legislature made it too easy. And given your deep concern about water quality and certain given the importance of the water quality to New Hampshire's tourism industry, I just wonder what you think, Commissioner Burak. Are you concerned that this rollback is going to hurt New Hampshire water quality?
Well, we're tracking that as closely as we can to determine whether or not there are particular circumstances where the amendments to the law are resulting in impacts that we might not have seen under the prior version of the law. It's going to take some time to see how that all plays out. Certainly, the challenge here is to make sure that we're getting that balance right. We all love our waters. We love our lakes. And the question is, can we love them too much by doing too much too close to the water? And we know that we need to have certain buffers, certain restrictions on what does occur close to the water bodies in order to best protect the water quality. Because, again, the challenge is that if we don't do it right, we will, in fact, end up reducing water quality, and that hurts everybody.
Well, Commissioner Burak, it's been good to talk to you, and happy 25th birthday for the Department of Environmental Services. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
That's Tom Burek, again, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in very quickly now with our March membership drive.
Good morning. Thank you, Laura. Really interesting conversation today with Tom Burek, water quality, air quality, things that affect our daily lives. And that's what you get when you listen to The Exchange here on NHPR, 1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org, to support the fine work that Laura and her team do every day. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Rick Ganley. We're inviting you to support the station right now and remind you that everyone who makes a gift by noon today, that's just 2 hours away, will be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card. So make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Yeah, not much time left to get in on that, so give us a call right now. Become a member of NHPR. And it's worthwhile to kind of recap and think about what the exchange has done in recent times. Now, this is a perfect example this morning of an important topic, an important show. But, you know, the exchange does that every single day. You know, in the last couple of months, let's talk about what they've done. We talked about the State of the Union recap and the State of the State address from Governor Lynch. 10 years of No Child Left Behind, parental prerogatives and public education. Of course, our ongoing immigration series, New Hampshire's Immigration Story. So many different shows the exchange has done. That's just a sample. And they do it day in and day out. Laura and her team find the most interesting topics that mean the most to residents right here in New Hampshire, and they give you a forum to talk back. That's why the exchange is so important to you. That's why the exchange is so important to the state of New Hampshire. Give us a call right now. Support that kind of programming. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call. That's 1-888-805-6477.
Or if you listen to our online stream, you can go over to the support page at nhpr.org and make a gift right there. You know, every morning, Laura opens the phone lines and solicits your thoughts, your questions, your concerns in the conversation. And today, the phone lines are open for another reason, because we're asking you to help continue the tradition of an open and free exchange of ideas, of your opportunity to talk to state leadership and elected officials and people involved in the issues that really matter on a daily basis. Your $100 contribution, less than $10 a month.